Welcome to the Sports Bros Podcast, featuring the almighty B-Live, the money man Scotty D, and your host, the head of creative Eddie Cool. The Sports Bros Podcast, by the fan, for the fan, talking sports just the way you like it. And without any further ado, let's give it up for the Sports Bros.
All that celebration. That could only mean one thing. It's time for another episode of your favorite sports podcast, none other than the Sports Bros Podcast. For those of you that are viewing us on social media, aka YouTube, you see the garb that I have on here, and Scotty D needed an extra 2 minutes to find his South Carolina Gamecocks shirt.
We got him.
Yeah, we got him. I would say who is we, but Scotty, if you want to be a part of we, you're more than welcome. That you are. I go by the name of Eddie Cool, a.k.a. the HOC up in this thing here at the Sports Bros Podcast. And of course, I have two of the best co-hosts in the world because I could do it by myself, but it ain't as fun. It's not. Introducing first with a smile on his face, the almighty B-Live.
What's happening? What's going on in the world today? This is tough. I mean, I didn't say they wouldn't, and I mean they went undefeated for the entire season, so I guess I'll just not gonna do it. All right, cool, just go ahead and introduce the other guy. I don't have it in me. I'm not gonna do it.
For once, the almighty B-Live is speechless. I thought he was speechless on last week's episode.
I got nothing. I ain't necessarily speechless. I'm choosing my words carefully. Let's just put it that way. Introduce the other guy, the fake fan that he is, and who is we and all the other stuff. Just go ahead.
He is the other guy. He is the pride of Washington, Pennsylvania. He also lived in South Carolina for an extended period of time.
Yeah, he got to do with the price of tea in China. He knows who his team is.
His teams, as you would say, be live.
Yeah, of all the teams, plural. all of them.
He is the one, the only, the legend himself, the money man, Scotty D.
Crowd is here, about to blow. Wait for me to start the show. Out the curtain, lights go up, I'm home. Whoa! Yeah, what a weekend. New champions all over the place this weekend. New champions. But yeah, our girls did it. We did it. We are undefeated. The dream season. And lots to say about that, Eddie Cool. Let's start the show.
Yeah, let's go ahead and start the show. Yeah, a story got finished last night. There was an end of an era, the beginning of a new one, and so forth and so such. I'm running out of stuff to say. With that being said, let's go ahead and hop right into it. The top of the order.
All right, let's get this thing started. Here it is, the top of the order.
Gentlemen, we have a new national champion. Later on in the episode, we'll talk about the women's national championship game between South Carolina and Iowa. But first off, we're going to talk about last night's championship game between the Purdue Boilermakers and the Huskies of UConn. Be live. Dan Hurley told us back in 2020, he said, "You better get us now." I had a feeling back then that he knew something that we did not know. So, what's your thoughts on it, B-Live, as they go back to back for the first time since the Florida Gators, back in the early 2000s?
It's one of those things where if you get a collection of players that just are in sync, that mesh well together, that are all about team as opposed to self, especially in this day and age of your NIL, your transfer portals, your one and dones, instant fame, blah, 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 all the things that could deter away from men's college basketball. When you stay true to values, This is what you get. And UConn said they're taking no prisoners. You can doubt us if you want to. But yeah, they 2 years in a row, back to back, and not even just back to back. I mean, in convincing fashion. I feel ridiculously silly for not picking UConn or not like in my bracket, because what reason did they give me that they didn't have the ability to repeat? Only thing I did was like, it's just really tough to repeat. It hasn't been done since 2007. It's only been done a handful of times in the history of college basketball, but they really honestly made it look easy. And they made Purdue one dimension. It was, they said, you know what? Zach Edey's going to get his points. And he did. He got 37 points, 10 rebounds. He's 7'4", agile. He knows how to put the ball on the hoop. Mm-hmm. They're like, all right, we'll give him his. But we'll just shut everybody else down. It's good. Like, Edey can't score 60 points. He can't score 75 points. And they just literally just, Edey scored 37 and produced 60 points. The rest of the team only scored 23 points. As much as Edey facilitates the offense, UConn was like, you know what? We'll let you have it. They only double teamed only a couple of times. They said, all right, we're gonna rebound the ball. We're gonna play our style of basketball. We're gonna let them have it.
Yeah, we're gonna let them have it. Yeah.
Oh man.
Yeah, and I'm overlooking at the stats. UConn shot 48.4% from the field, 27% from 3 points, from the 3-point arc. Wow. Wow. Scotty, you like this number. Purdue, they went 1-for-7.
Yep.
1-for-7 behind the arc, and they didn't hit that until late in the first half. So they were able to neutralize. They were really able to, UConn, that solo defense, they were able to neutralize Purdue. And once you look at it, like you said, Zach Edey had 37 points. And I think the next guy, he may have had like, what, 10?
12 points.
Yeah, he had 12 points. While you had guys from UConn.
It was a balanced attack.
Yeah, it was a balanced attack. Yeah, UConn just gave them all that they can handle. And man, I'm telling you, UConn, you think they can run it back for a third year, be live?
Here's what I'll say to that. I'll continue to say the same thing. It's always going to be a war of attrition when it comes to going back to back, doing it all over again, assembling the same teams, et cetera, et cetera. And do we have some of these players? Some of them graduating, moving on to the league. Let's see, they big 7'2" guy. He's only a sophomore, so he's got at least another year in him if he doesn't decide to go to the league. I'm pretty sure he'll come back. Mm-hmm. He's a developmental player, if anything like that. Was it my man Donovan Klingon?
Yeah, Klingon. Yeah, who had 11. Yep, hey. Yep. Castle had 15. Spencer had 11. And then Newton, that guy. Yeah, Tristan Newton. Woo-hoo-hoo. Yeah, he was a thorn in their side all night with only 20 points. Because like you said, be like, they had a balanced attack. But go ahead, I didn't mean to interrupt you there.
Oh, no, that's perfect. Because, I mean, essentially, I said Tristan Newton with his 20 points, he's a senior. Does he come back? Does he have a year of eligibility left? We don't know. So it's too early to tell what's going to happen. We're going to allow UConn to enjoy this well-deserved victory. Dan Hurley sitting on top of the collegiate basketball world, could easily be considered one of the best coaches at this time, the way he has schemed, the way he has put this team together. I mean, you can't shake back to back. Like, and even something like some of the greats never had back-to-back. I don't think Dean Smith ever had back-to-back. Mm-mm. Roy Williams never had back-to-back. Coach K did it one time, I believe, 91 and 92. But then that was it. Like, that was how long ago? And he just retired a couple years ago. So he only did, that's how tough it is.
Don't forget, John Wooden did it 10 times in a row.
But that's just,
that's
an anomaly that will never, and I mean ever, happen again.
No.
Because it's just the scope, the way college basketball is built, there's just talent everywhere. We're able, like UCLA just loaded up. They had squad after squad, and everybody wanted to be a part of it. So now parity, weight, I mean, talent is so, it is spread out, and it's one of those things. That's why it's, again, it's three times in a row is unfathomable, but it's not outside the realm of thinking, because look at coaching and look at the carousel and look at how things are rotating here and there, especially big news with some dude that used to coach Kentucky.
Yeah, John. Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned that, B-Lav. John Calipari, the news broke Sunday night that he will be leaving Kentucky and he will be headed to Arkansas. And at the time of this podcast being published, from what we last understood, the deal is being finalized. To what details, we don't know as of yet. But him leaving Kentucky, you know what? I'm gonna be completely honest with you. And me and you have had this conversation, you know, on the podcast. But I'll get deeper into it now. When I looked at John Calipari at that post-game press conference after they lost in the first round, I looked at him and I was like, you know what? Something don't look right. Something seemed off. Something just seemed off. Okay, I'm like, okay, here it is. You done got bounced out. You got all this talent, got bounced out. I don't know if heads or butt, but something somewhere beat out to me and just seemed off. What say you?
You know what was off? His butt cheeks, because they were on. That was what was off, because he knew this is the second year in a row that they got bounced out of the first round by, what was it, 14 seed this year, 15 seed last year. What was it, St. Peter's last year's?
Yeah, St. Peter's last year.
He said it. The thing about it is, he said it in the post-game interview. He's like, these teams are averaging 20, they're 22, 23 years old. My teams are averaging 18. You did this. You built that. I said it when they first hired him. I've been adamant about this whole one and done will be the destruction of college basketball. And I watched it as it happened. And then the beautiful thing happened. These mid-major teams that keep guys for 4 or 5 years. They started on the road. And last year was the epitome of it. When you saw San Diego State, Florida Atlantic, Miami, like, these guys were been teammates for years. They built that chemistry. That's what college basketball has always been about for me. It wasn't about the glory. It wasn't about the fame. It was about just guys playing together, teamwork. And Coach Calipari was the exact opposite of that. Some people try to argue with me and say that, oh, Calipari is a great coach because he's able to bring these guys that have never played before. They're able to compete. Yeah, you can go a long way with buttloads of talent, but if you don't have that cohesiveness as a team, and you see it day in and day out, they kept running into these programs. A, they had nothing to lose, everything to gain. You got a big bullseye on your back. And then on top of that, you bring all this inexperience to the table and think you can outman and just be better athletes or better skilled or what. No, that doesn't work that way. Basketball is there's a chemistry. And he gave Kentucky that flash and that fame that they were used to, but he didn't give them the continuity. And the writing was on the wall, especially the past couple of years.
Yeah.
He did get him a championship. He's been to four Final Fours. That's nothing to shake off. But when it came down to it, he just that whole one and done philosophy that he had, it didn't last. I knew it wasn't going to last. And now he ran because he knew that he knew that this following season, the expectations were going to be, hey, this is your last chance, bro. You need to produce and et cetera. Now he done left a whole bunch of one and done players. He done ran off. He's probably going to change his whole philosophy in Arkansas. And but then with Arkansas, he gonna have that NIL money from the Waltons and Jerry Jones. Trust me.
Yeah.
Arkansas got money.
The money, yeah. I'm glad you brought it up. The money is there, be like between them two, the Waltons and the Jerry Jones.
The thing about this, Calipari can recruit. He will recruit. Arkansas will be better, but he ran to a program that he knew that they weren't going to just up and fire him because Arkansas just hasn't been that strong in basketball in some time. Mm-hmm. I was looking at it yesterday. Do you remember? You remember a dude named Corliss Williamson?
Big, yeah. Corliss Williamson, Scotty Thurman. Nolan Richardson, 40 minutes of hell. That team, yeah, man, I remember that team.
I was looking back and I was like, oh man, I forgot about these boys. So Arkansas, there's going to be a lot of eyes. We're going to see what Calipari does. Does he look at a transfer portal? Excuse me. Yeah.
Don't worry about it, B-Live. I'll cut all that out. You good.
Does he look at a transfer portal? Does some of the players that he had at Kentucky jump ship with them? It's a lot to say, but man, Calipari, you ran. It was a weak move for you to do. Kentucky, that has to be easily the most coveted coaching position to have for any, especially any up and coming or any even tenured coach right now. Oh yeah, I would want to be at Kentucky because it's a storied program. You're going to have the backing. It's going to be high profile. It's going to be pressure involved, but you can immediately make a name for yourself if you can take Kentucky, and they'll give you a couple years. They'll give you a couple years. We'll see. There's a lot to unwrap with that.
Yeah. Do you think Coach K is underachieved by just winning one Final Four? Because I'm looking at a list of some of the players that he's coached during his time at his universities. Bam Adebayo, Devin Booker, DeMarcus Cousins, Boogie Cousins, Anthony Davis, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, Derrick Rose, and there's probably some more that I'm missing. I'm just feeling like Coach Cal should have won more with what he had with. You know, I mean, he had a bunch of talent. And let's not forget, he was at UMass when he had Marcus Camby and that whole team and that whole squad. And here's some more lists. Karl Anthony Towns, John Wall, DJ Wagner, De'Aaron Fox, Malik Monk, the aforementioned Adebayo, Davis, Cousins, Booker. Can't forget Tyler Hero. So you mean to tell I'm and Derrick Rose, so you mean to tell me, damn, all you could do was win one? Win one national title? So I'm just like, oh, come on, man. Like, what are we doing? Even though, you know, the Memphis season is damn near, we damn near forgot about that run because all of what happened with that, Derrick Rose and the cheating and the scandal and all that. And the NCAA said, nah, we're going to take all that back and we're going to let this never happen. But you think he underachieved?
Oh, he absolutely underachieved.
Severely.
But here's the thing. It's tough to line up. It's madness for a reason.
Yeah.
And through and through, you'll see it where, of course, coaching will always be at the top of teams when that make it and win it all. Mm-hmm. But one thing I've seen just through and through for the majority of my entire life is that teams that have cohesiveness, you could have star appeal and all this thing. You could have a couple big time names over here and you could have all the talent in the world, but very, very few times do you see where talent just overrules teamwork and cohesiveness. And I mean, even your blue collar teams, they still it was the team that did it all. I mean, and Coach Calipari he had players. I don't think he ever had a team. He had a bunch of really, really good players that have all gone on and made success in the NBA. And that was his stick. He was like, yo, I'm going to put you in the league. Come to me. I'm going to put you in the league. He's done that part.
Yeah. Admittedly, like, hey, you come here, you know, your chances of going to the league are going to go from here to here.
But at the end of the day, though, I think he did Kentucky a disservice. Kentucky is one of the most storied traditional programs, and he turned that program upside down. It became less about Kentucky basketball and the tradition. It became more about star appeal, star power, and players making it to the NBA. He made a drastic shift in a time where they was like, all right, can't just go straight to the NBA. You have to apply and play a year in college. And he sort of embraced that. But I think I would have rather seen him build teams and then have that occasional one or two players that like, all right, I'm going to do one and done. And I think he did a lot better. Even Coach K was struggling with that at the end of his tenure. Where I mean, he had players, he had ballers, he had those one and done that were young, and Coach K can out coach almost anybody, and he couldn't out coach some of these squads that had tenured players and everything like that.
Yeah, I think we're looking at now be live between looking at the college landscape, and we'll talk about this in depth in a later episode because we got to move to the women's national title game. If you look at it now, with the introduction of the NILs and the transfer portals, I think, as we said it before in the past, it goes from everybody being your Alabamas, your Kentuckys, and your top-tier programs being here. And then you have your mid-majors, then you got everybody else. But now with the transfer portal at NILs, it's up to here. And now we're seeing coaches like John Calipari in college basketball and Nick Saban in football like, ooh, boy, I'm going to have to go back to the drawing board. Or it's gotten to the point where in Nick Saban's case, and correct me if I'm wrong, Nick's like, look, I can't do this no more. I can't. The odds are stacked against me, but it was always, hey, come to Alabama and always come to Kentucky. But now it's like, well, why am I going to go here when I can go to Arkansas and get some money, or hell, even Coastal Carolina and get some money, or from a football standpoint, hell, what's a school, whatever school, you know, I go somewhere else and get some damn money. You know what I mean? Like, why do I need to come here? You know, why I'm going to go to Ole Miss because they got a bag here, and it's just. I think from a competition standpoint, the playing field has been leveled. To an extent, though.
I think that NIL deals and stuff like that only matter to certain level of players. And it's starting to become more and more evident. It's not the elite players. Especially when it comes to college basketball, not the elite players that are in the limelight. It's the elite teams. So I mean, Zach Edey, yes, he has made a name for himself. He's just a big dude. But when it comes to elite, what we call, I mean, he is the player of the year for a reason.
That he is.
But that, I mean, side note, by the way, do you know that Zach Edey can't get NIL deals?
I saw that yesterday.
He's on a student visa. He's Canadian. He can't get NIL deals.
Damn.
That's crazy. Well, it is what it is. But that's your UConn, Purdue team element, NIL, John Calipari, one and done. Sorry, running away scared because they're going to fire his ass.
Yeah, I'm scared. I told you he looked shook at that press conference. I'm like,
oh, he was hurt. He was on the hot seat for real. And a lot of people were calling for his job. So he said, you know what? Yeah. Wow. But with that being said, do we have to talk about it? Because I need.
Oh, yeah, B-Live. You know we got to talk about it. Let's go ahead and hop into the matchup of Iowa versus South Carolina for it all. All right, now that we cover the men's side of things, let's go ahead and talk about the women's basketball national champion for the third time in program history. The University of South Carolina, the Lady Gamecocks, led by Dawn Staley, wins another one as they defeat Caitlin Clark and the Iowa Hawkeyes. Scotty D, you got any takeaways from this here game?
No. I'm starting this off first.
Okay. We'll let you have it. I was trying to let you get yourself together because you look a little, just go ahead. Do what you got to do.
I'm going to go ahead and say this. I want to speak to all of Gamecock Nation, Game Coots, Game Chickens, all the nicknames that I have for y'all. I want y'all to hear me and hear me loud and proud. This is a legit championship. I don't want to hear nothing else about your club hockey team. I don't want to hear nothing about equestrian. I could care less about your tennis and all these other things that y'all claim, whatever, blah, blah, blah. This is what a national champion looks like. I will put my hands together. I will applaud, congratulate the Lady Gamecock led by Dawn Staley. Scotty D. I wasn't talking to you. I was talking to real Gamecock fans, not you. You're the only person in the history of ever. There was an episode, we've done this before. You're the only person I know that owns Gamecock gear and Clemson gear. You're the only one that has both in the same closet. That's
I like to support thing. Our team. I like to support our team.
Be live. He's being a great friend, you know, because he supports your team when they win, and he support my team when they win. So Scott,
I'm happy that we won.
He was riding with you when Clemson was making their amazing run in the tournament, and even when you win your national championships of football, he rolled with you then. Now Scotty D is riding with me when the girls win the championship, and he gonna ride. So Scotty D is the epitome of a good friend.
You stay on that side of the fence. I ain't got time for this. You are officially a Gamecock fan and a Gamecock fan only. I don't want to see you cheer for the Pitt Panthers ever again. I don't want you to cheer for the Clemson Tigers. You a game chicken now. Go ahead.
Scotty D, I'm the friend. You're a good friend, Scotty D.
I'm the boss of me. It was just a case of the best team in the world. The best team won. I mean, obviously, undefeated. Yeah, this year. And Iowa put up a fight. And even when they cut the lead to, what was it, 6 points, four, they had an 8-0 run late in the fourth quarter. It just seemed like Iowa ran out of gas. At that point, Caitlin Clark, who's like the greatest athlete in the history of the world, she was throwing up threes, turning over the ball, throwing up shots in the lane that weren't even coming close to going in. And I just think the Gamecocks wore that team down, and the best team came out on top at the end. I mean, it was really, to me, that obvious, that simple. I mean, it was a heck of a run for Iowa, but South Carolina, there was a reason they were undefeated. They got tested a couple times, even had like the miracle shot off the window against Tennessee in the SEC tournament. It was just the best team won, and hey, I'm happy for them.
Yeah, you're right, Scott. The best team won. Oh, B-Live, go ahead, you.
Oh, yeah, I wanted to throw this out here because unsung hero of that game, Raven Johnson. She put the clamps on Caitlin Clark. Dawn Staley, when they made the switch, Caitlin Clark had 18 points in the first quarter, Nick, and was on a tear, but they were like, nope, switch it up. Raven Johnson said, you know what? I remember what you did to me last year.
Yep.
I re-
I remember when you brushed me off and didn't care, didn't think I had a shot. Okay, you know what? I may not be the best shooter, but I can lock you up on defense. And did she ever? Man, that's I will applaud that every day of the week, twice on Sunday, because defense wins championships, and Raven Johnson showed exactly why that is. So my bad, I decided to sneak that in there. I don't know if that was in your notes, but I would at least want to acknowledge that much. Yeah, I was.
That was great coaching. That's why they're, you know, all credit to Dawn Staley for getting this job done in such a, I guess not dramatic, emphatic is way I guess I would say, because it left no question who the best team in the country was. No question.
Yeah, because at one point South Carolina was down, it was 20-9 in favor of the Hawkeyes, but after that late first quarter timeout, Dawn Staley sat him down. She said, look, this is what it is. You know what you got to do. But we also got to score as well, too. And they came back and they tied it up, and they never really left the pedal after that. So, I mean, Dawn Staley is one of the best coaches of all time. I mean, I know that terminology gets thrown around real quick, but you look what she did in 2017, 2022, and now here in 2024. She's been there since, like, what, 2008, if I'm not mistaken. She's been there for quite some time. And she's pretty much seen that team, you know, be at the bottom of the barrel to the top of the mountain. So congratulations to Dawn Staley. She does a good job. And one more thing I noticed. I've seen, and you guys, you may have noticed it too. Why is it? I understand that Caitlin Clark is the best in the game, the best at what she does. Need I remind you of the media outlets, Caitlin Clark didn't win last night. She didn't win last night. So all this extra coverage of Caitlin Clark, it's like, why are we doing this? We have a team that went undefeated.
No, Eddie, you know what? You're asking the wrong person. Because we got somebody on our panel, one of the three of us, that is all about entertainment. It's the most interesting story. Explain this one, Money Man. I want to hear you. Yes. Caitlin Clark didn't win. Yeah, that sounds oddly familiar.
You just explained it.
No. I want you to explain it. I was mocking you because it sounds ridiculous. If you say it, maybe it won't sound as ridiculous.
What are you asking me? Why Caitlin Clark gets a lot of coverage?
Yes, because Eddie Kuhl made it, is making a very valid point, and so
It is a very valid point. When the game was over and the Gamecocks were celebrating, the camera was close up on Caitlin Clark shaking hands in line. Yeah, I was like, get out of her face, give her a little bit of space here, and. Show the team that won. I was sitting there. So my mom was sitting there. I said, "Look at this. Don't get the camera out of Caitlin Clark's face, because."
So we can agree that get the camera out of LeBron's face too, and Steph Curry's face, and put it on.
Listen. I don't know what we're comparing to. Different networks. Different. I mean, are you saying
it's the same? Clark, it's the same network, ESPN.
Caitlin Clark deserves all of that attention. Now, do I think they should have got the camera out of her face? Yes, but is she the most compelling story in college basketball right now? Men's or women's? Yes. Yes.
No.
What? She's more interesting than the entire South Carolina. Yeah, but she's more interesting.
The Gamecocks went undefeated.
Awesome story.
You know what's even more awesomer? Now, I know that's not a word, but the fact that not only did the Gamecocks go undefeated, they went undefeated with a completely different starting lineup. None of the players, they lost the entire starting lineup. And Dawn Staley built this entire team that hadn't played together before and won the national championship. Oh, Caitlin Clark threw up another three-pointer. See, I knew I was going to, boy, I'll tell you what.
Not the fan. Yeah.
I don't know what you're getting at here. When the game was over, they asked Dawn Staley, my opinion, one question too many, because I was like, okay, now she's rambling. But that's because they asked her a question, then they asked her another question, asked another question. Okay, move on to the next person. And anyway, they kept showing Caitlin Clark. Of course, yeah, that it was probably too much. But is she still not the most interesting person in college sports? Yeah,
she is. She is. I won't deny that.
And that was Yeah, and that was the end of her chapter. She was closed.
Yeah, I won't deny that. I just wish that, you know, I'm not, and I probably will be saying the same thing if it wasn't South Carolina being involved in the national championship game. But that's the winner's moment. And just like you said, your mom said, okay, she lost. The camera is just in her face and da-da-da. I mean, like, we know she's going to the Indiana Fever. Her and them, Aaliyah Boston, are going to be teammates. I mean, we kind of know what's going to happen, you know, already.
Is that a WNBA team?
Yes, Scotty D. That's a WNBA team. That's a WNBA team.
Hey, look, I remember Walter Payton's last game. Playoff game, Walter Payton.
I thought you said Walter Payton. I'm like,
that's exactly what he said.
Walter Payton, the legendary running back from the Bears.
Uh-huh.
And whenever he, I think he actually may have had the ball and came up short of a first down, and he walked off the field and he was sitting on the sideline, and the camera just stayed with him. And that was all they were showing. Why was that? Because he was the all-time leading rusher in NFL history, and that was his last moment on the playing field, and they were capturing him with his head down, sitting on the bench on the sideline. So this is the greatest player and arguably greatest player in women's college basketball, the highest scorer ever, and when they want to show her leaving on the field. Is it too much? Yeah, but she's still the most interesting story.
I mean, think about it.
I'm not really sure what the argument is here, to be honest with you.
I'm just saying, I just wish they would have had
comparison.
I wish they would have just centered the focus more on the South Carolina Gamecocks. But then again, it's one of them things where, you know, damned if you do, damned if you don't. You know what I'm saying? It's damned if you do, damned if you don't. So we get to
maybe would have had a little bit. I mean, I don't think there was a lack of attention on the Gamecocks. They show their celebration. And the girl, like I said, I thought that the Dawn Staley interview actually was too much. It was too long. And then, they're going to give coverage to the girl who's going to be the number one pick in the draft next year. She's still the story. She was the story. She was the reason the eyes were on the game in the first place. So many eyes. On Monday night, they had the highest rated women's college game ever. Whenever they play, who do they play? UConn? I watched it.
Not UConn.
No, that was the Friday.
LSU.
Game.
LSU.
LSU. There you go. And then Friday night high ratings when they played UConn, and then high ratings again for this game. She drew all the attention. So are you going to say, "Oh, she lost, we're not going to put her on TV anymore"? No, of course you're going to show her. I mean, I don't understand the argument.
So Caitlin Clark is the new Taylor Swift. All right, cool.
Oh boy. Oh man, here we go. Let's go.
Like, I just like poking a bear. These are jokes, man. I'm.
Yeah, let's go.
I don't
ahead.
Mean that at all.
Interesting people get more camera time. That's the way it works.
Yeah, you're right about that, man. I really can't deny that, man. I've just been seeing everything on social media, and sometimes when it comes to social media, you can't really put much into it. But I'm like, okay, a lot of people saying the same thing, and I watch ESPN throughout the course of the night. I'm like, okay, are they going to get a single individual segment about the South Carolina Gamecocks? But I will say this, though. Dawn Staley is a true class act.
Yeah, I agree. I like her a lot.
She is a true class act. She stays out the way. She's only concerned about what goes on with her team. And I couldn't ask for a better coach. I could not ask for a better coach. Now, if we can get some of that energy rubbed off on their football team, be loud, shut up. Now, if we get some of that energy rubbed off on that football team, I would really be happy. I would really, really be happy.
Let me ask you guys this. The game UConn and Iowa on Friday night, the final 9 seconds, UConn down a point, offensive foul is called on the screen. What do you think of that call?
You can't call that. You can't call that there.
That's too late.
It's one of those things. It drives me insane. I know you fellas feel the same way with me. Nobody wants the game, any game for that matter, to be in the hands of the referee.
No.
Especially a game of that magnitude. That was such a bang bang call. I've looked at it 27,000 times. Yes, you can call. Here's the thing: if you call that, you have to call 27,000 other screens.
Yep.
Like, come on, bro, that was such ticky tacky, and it almost looked like the referee was looking for that before it actually happened. Come on. Refs trying to make their name and be all emphatic about it, and that's a charge, and do all this. Come on, bro. Come on.
It ain't about you. It's about them.
Oh,
yeah.
Man.
It's about them. And just like we all can agree on this one. We don't like when the game is, you know, when it comes down to referees, especially games like I said, this hype, this magnitude, what's at stake and what's on the line. You know, one of the bigger matchups in the tournament with Beckers and Caitlin Clark. That's a big time matchup, but you know, that game will be remembered for that lame ass screen call and not the not the matchup itself. So I mean,
Gino was speechless. And if for him to be just like, he was dumbfounded with that call. And I don't see any other way around it. That was just a terrible, terrible call. And it changed everything. I mean, we could easily be talking about South Carolina UConn, which would be even more historic. Yeah. Just because of the South Carolina is the heir apparent. UConn is maybe UConn passing the torch.
Yeah.
So
no, it wouldn't have been more historic.
Gino versus Don, you don't think?
No.
I think
this because Caitlin Clark was the biggest story of the year. So
she's the biggest story, but I think UConn would have been a better matchup. Like skill.
Maybe. I don't know. But as far as like the historic wise, I mean, this was the all time scoring leader going against an undefeated team. That was the historic part of that game. I think both sides on that call have legitimate reason to be right, because the call was probably right. I mean, it was an offensive foul. It was an illegal screen. She threw her elbow out and she had a wide stance to force that. But I don't think the rest of the game was getting called that tight. So I think the expectation was that probably, put it this way, if that call was not made and the girl from UConn comes around and hits the game winning jumper, I don't think the big outcry from Iowa would have been there was an illegal screen that they missed. I don't think it was that obvious a call where that was like everyone would have been jumping up and down saying they missed that call and that's why we lost that game. I don't think that it wasn't that egregious, obvious of a call. I kind of agree with you guys. I think they need to let that one play out a little bit. I mean, it's just if you call it tight and everyone's getting foul trouble, you know, if you start that call in the first quarter where you're like, you know, and sometimes you see that in games where officials are like, we're not going to let this thing get too physical. And they start calling very, I guess, tic-tac calls, we would say, very, very tight call. But yeah, that was a tough one. I don't think the call was incorrect. I just didn't like that it was made, I think is best way I would put it.
That late into the game, I understand that. Fellas, guess what? Well, that concludes our coverage of college hoops. It's been a great season on the men's side of things and on the women's side of things. Scotty D, guess what? It's Masters Week. And how does Jim Nantz say it?
A tradition unlike any other, the Masters on CBS.
Is this his last one?
Not that I know. He is retired from doing college basketball.
Okay.
And I think he's retired from everything but this. I think this is one thing. I mean, he was down there. He was at the NCAA tournament wearing his Houston gear.
Yeah, that's right. He's a Houston. He's an alumni for real. All right. So here we go, fellas. Let's go ahead and look into it. Masters picks. Who we got? Scotty D, I'm going to start with you. Who we got?
Well, I mean, the obvious names at the top of the list are John Rahm and Scottie Scheffler. I think I'm going to – the last couple of years, I think I've picked Rory, expecting him to finally break through. I'm not going to do that. I'm going to go with Victor Hovland kind of a – look, he's played good golf the last couple of years, and he's due to get a major at some point. I don't know if this is the one for him, but I'm just going to go out on a limb and pick Victor Hovland.
Okay, Victor Hovland, be live. Who you got?
I've been thinking about. I mean, it's one of those things where the easy answer would be Scottie Scheffler, because he's literally been at the top of the past God knows how many tournaments. He actually missed the previous tournament where he missed a easy putt that cost him the win. I can't remember the tournament, but it was last week. But
yeah, he's playing really good. It's hard not to pick him.
I just and I'm I look Xander Schauffele's up there.
He's been playing good too.
I'm you know what? I'm gonna go with Xander. I'm gonna go with Xander. I just feel like
I like it.
Scheffler's gonna be in the mix, but I think this is one of those times where Schauffele. I'm gonna go with that just because I like to be unconventional at times. I don't want to pick the easy one, but yeah,
that's kind of my thinking on it too. Because how do you not pick Scottie Scheffler?
Right, in the last month,
he won back to back tournaments after not winning any for 9 months. How do you not pick Scottie Scheffler? Yeah, maybe that's what we should have said. Let's make our non-Scotty Scheffler picks here. I think we all kind of like him to win this thing, right?
I kind of like him, but like you said, Scotty D, he's picked up steam as of late, winning his last, what is it, his last, how many tournament? He won the last few events, so now he's going in with, he's going in with the proverbial momentum. He's going in with the momentum, so it's kind of hard. Like you said, it's kind of hard to be like, okay, well, you do catch fire, but we do know that wacky things happened at the Masters. With that being said, I'm picking Tiger Woods. I'm lying. I'm joking. No, God, no.
I'm not even supposed to laugh like that because we know he's not going to finish the tournament. But
like I said,
is he in it? Is he going to show?
He's in Augusta right now.
Yeah, like I said, stranger things have happened at this tournament. So you know, I don't want to be over here Sunday looking like I was just joking. But look what we got here. I'm with you, Bly, man. Xander Schauffele, I'm going to have to roll with him. This year will be a six-star. He has two top three finishes and a top 10 last year in Augusta. So, I mean, he looks to be on par to be in the thick of things for the Masters. Fellas, with that being said, that means the weather is warming up. Hopefully, I didn't get blinded by this eclipse. I didn't. I watched it on TV, of course. And
has it already happened? It's already over.
It's already over with. It was just the sun and the moon doing this and then doing that.
It was Monday afternoon.
It was Monday afternoon. Matter of fact, I know this eclipse. It's a big booty girl. She's standing in front of the light and pass. Anyways, that's neither here nor there. Yeah, you want to talk about you want to talk about an eclipse. Anyways, real quick, these NFL rules, fellas. I am a fan of the kickoff rule. Now I'm noticing that they have not used that in the UFL. It's just a traditional one. But I'm a fan of the XFL style kickoff rule because I think it gives the kick returners a job.
Explain it to me. I'm lost on the new NFL kickoff rule. Do we know exactly what it is? Because I thought I heard him on ESPN saying that if you catch it between the five or the goal line and 10 yard line, they release a tiger from the sideline and you have to run away from the tiger. But it's only if it's caught between the goal line and the 10-yard line, a tiger comes up out of a trap door, like a gladiator, and you have to run away from the tiger. So that would most definitely make the game more interesting. Kickoffs have been boring. You add the tiger element to a kickoff, and it most certainly does.
And swords.
It definitely makes the kickoffs more interesting. Swords and tigers, yeah.
That's what, ladies and gentlemen, that's a call.
Are you not entertained?
That's a callback from a previous episode with the swords.
Oh, not the swords.
Oh, man, Scotty D.
I forgot all about that one.
Oh, you can't. You couldn't forget him. That was one of the best ones. It was like, what do they need to do to make the game exciting? Scotty D said, swords. We need more swords at the 50-yard line, over the overtime rule. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. About that.
Oh, God.
Oh, God. So be like,
did I misinterpret the tiger rule? Is there going to be tigers, or did I misunderstand that?
It's pretty close. No. So be like, how does the XFL style kickoff go again? The only person that moves is the kicker, and once the ball is in the air and fielded by the return man, then they can go ahead and engage in the normal act. I think they landed, 5 yards apart, 10 yards apart,
something like that. I'm trying to pull it up real quick. trying to catch my breath. This guy did stupid. And
no one can move till the receiver catches the ball, correct?
Yeah, correct.
Yeah, till you catch the ball. Yeah. And I think that could be, I think that was a very good rule change from a safety and a competition standpoint.
Are they moving it back? Where are they kicking the ball off from? That was another thing I think they were talking about, was the alignment was going to be different. The setup was going to be moved from where the opposing team is lined up into where the kickoff team is lining up. And where do they put the Tiger? Like, before kickoff, who's in charge? Is it the home team has to supply the Tiger?
Yeah, the home team got to supply the Tiger, man. I mean, because you know, ever since this whole Joe Exotic Tiger King thing, you know, people are real leery about having random-ass Tigers out on the field.
So the kicking team, 10 players will be lined up on the receiving team's 40-yard line. So they're going to be on the 40-yard line receiving team.
So they're going to be the opposite side of the field from where they kicked off.
Well, at least 9 receiving team players must line up between the 35 and the 30-yard line. So they have a 5-yard area. So not all, they don't have to all be on the same line. They have to be within five yards. And then no one can move until the kickoff returner catches the ball. So we're going to see a lot of touchbacks anyway, because they're not moving. This ball's still being kicked from the 35-yard line, and every kicker in the NFL kicks it out of the back of the end zone anyway. So you might get a couple in there, but I really think about this. I'm wondering, onside kicks, how does that even work? Or is that no longer a thing? The one that it's blowing my mind, the reaction that I've seen across all these social media networks and whatnot, is the hip drop tackle. Mm-hmm. And why so many people are adamant against it. It's a dangerous tackle. It's literally just like a horse collar. Like, it's your body's not designed to bend that way. And everybody's always, ain't gonna be flag football. I'm like, have y'all not seen these tackles? The last thing I ever want in my life is for somebody to grab me from behind and put their full body weight on the back of my leg, grabbing the top. That's just, you're not meant to bend that way. It is what it is. And form tackling, you just have to learn how to form tackle.
Yeah,
that's just. And Sky D, am I missing a part of that rule change or?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I understand the similarity to the horse collar, but I mean, if you're a 5'10", 200-pound D-back and Derrick Henry's coming at you, sometimes you're left in no position other than to do that. I mean, you're taking, you're just year after year, you're just peeling away things that that defenders need to stop the other team from scoring. I mean, it's getting more difficult, and I get it, and I'm not like super adamant against it, but the fact that the players didn't want it is what was not taken into consideration. The players didn't want this rule. The players' union voted against it. It was the owners that chose this rule. So I felt like that should have been taken into more consideration. If they're willing to put their bodies on the line, because none of the stuff that they do out there is natural, let alone this one. I mean, flying full speed into one another is something you sign up for. That it's not an everyday practice. It's not baseball or basketball where you're trying to avoid running into one another. That's the whole point of this, is to go out and hurt each other. So, yeah, I understand. I know that I've heard a couple players say that they're glad that this rule is coming into play, but I think most of them feel like it's not necessary. So, I don't know. This is a tough one. It's just going to be one more thing that the officials are going to have a subjective look at, and it's just going to cause on-field chaos and delays in the game and all that stuff. I mean, it's just, this one isn't a clear cut as a helmet shot to the head that you had to eliminate from the game for player safety. This one is going to be a little bit more subjective. As now, did I let go before he came down? Did I really yank? I mean, it's, you know, with the horse collar, you pretty much see if the hand goes into the nameplate, that's going to get called. But this is going to be tough. That I have him up around his rib cage. I have him down the. I mean, it's going to be. Did my arm slide down? This one's going to be tough to officiate. This is a tough rule here.
You know, I've always thought, because you know, when I was playing football, when I tackled, you know, like I was always told, line your man, hit and wrap up. But then again, when you try to hit, you have to think. You got a guy going to the left. You got to go to the left with him too. So what are you going to do? Are you going to hit him up, or logically thinking, okay, well, he gonna need his hips to turn. So let me get him around these hips and bring him down. Because when I always tackled, and I had to tackle somebody from behind, I had to make sure I was always aware that, okay, first of all, I didn't want their cleat in my chest. Even though I had on pads, you still feel that. I don't care. You still feel that. So I try to put myself as to where I wouldn't tackle him so close to his hips, but more like round his arms. But more like, you know, like round his arms, like right, like up in this area right here where he, like, you know, he really had to turn. And try to bring him down like that. But then again, you're okay, well, he's going to land on his shoulder. I mean, well, you know, it's football. It's the game we signed to play for. Injuries are going to happen. So just like you said, we just had this conversation last year about rule changes, didn't we?
Right.
Just as soon as the referees get used to something, okay, this we got to get used to this. And by like week 8 or week 9, okay, it's in repetition. Another offseason comes. Another set of rule changes happens. Then we got to eat an – I'm going to say this. It's just like working at the Cheesecake Factory, which I do if you're a server. Every 6 months, there's a new menu rollout. So which means you better learn these new items quick, because that's what's coming 6 months down the road. Another doggone rollout. And you got to get it, you got to get it the best way you know how. So I just think that it's one of wait and see things. Are the calls going to be, you know, legitimate? Are they going to have to go to replay and spend another 4 to 5 minutes? Well, did he pull him down? Did he do this? It's in a way, it's too much. It's entirely too much. But fellas, looking at my phone because I've yet to get a watch. Guess what time it is?
Well, what's going on? What time is the play? What's happening?
Oh, Black Snow. I'm glad you asked this time once again for our favorite portion of the show, the choices of the voices. With that being said, hey, yo, button, hit it. Choices of the voices coming at you right here on the Sports Bros Podcast.
And now, our favorite part of the show, the choices of the voices.
Once again, thank you to the wonderful and
ever so lovely Miss Button
for introducing our favorite portion of the show, the choices of the voices. 240 plus episodes. We ask you the question, y'all give us the answer. We talk about it. B-Live decides if you're going to the penalty box. Scotty D actually claps backs at people, and now just read it and laugh. And that's all I do, really. All right. So Scotty D, what's on tap for this week's choices of the voices?
All right. We were asking you not what fan base you hate the most, but what fan base do you think gets the most hate and most disrespect? And I think our answers actually came out pretty good for the most part of following the requested question. Eddie Cool, what did the people say?
Scotty, he makes this as easy as possible. I swear he does. Like straight softballs. All y'all got to do is hit them, right? Craig Burns says they were the worst in 1968 and have only gotten worser over the time, if that's a word. He talking about the Philadelphia Eagles fan, and he shows us a clip of the newspaper from the Philadelphia Inquirer that says Eagles fans pelt Santa with snowballs.
They never shed that stigma. They've been talking about that one for decades.
Yeah. You know something, man. Once you do something to Santa Claus, it's unforgivable. It is totally unforgivable.
Yeah, and people have been hating their fan base ever since.
Yeah. Hey, let's go to Russ. Go ahead, B-Live.
I'll say the fact that they have a jail, they have holding cells in their stadium to let you know everything about Eagles fans. Ta-da! City of brotherly love. Ain't no love there.
I wonder if they had to use that for WrestleMania this past weekend.
I don't know. I don't think they had the holding cells in the Link, but they definitely had it in the old Veterans Stadium.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I don't know if they have that either at this point, but they did have a little holding place for you in the vet.
Veteran Stadium knew what time it was.
They used to pack it full of Cowboys fans back in the day.
Oh, man. Hey. Back in the day. Anything you talk about the Cowboys, back in the day.
Hey, it's like Eagles fans go this way. Cowboys fans go through these two small corridors right here. Wait a minute. These are some seats, and you're petting that tight like sardines. They got you. Trey Dizzle says, clearly the Dallas Cowboys get the most hate. But I want to talk about love. Dak Prescott didn't get an extension, and I freaking love that. All right, so Trey Dizzle is ecstatic about that.
All in.
It's a tease. It's a teaser.
Yep, it's a tease. All right.
He's going to get us for more money later.
Yep. And Tom Wynn says, Trey Duke, yes, hockey, hoops, and baseball considered, nobody garners or deserves more contempt and vile hatred than the Dallas Cowboys. Heck, if that dude Money just wore a different jersey, he might have scored some women. Somebody got jokes.
I've been waiting on this since this question came out, this response. Scotty D, please give me something.
This is coming from a guy who's a fan of multiple teams, and when the games are close, can't watch the end of games. That's the guy. That's the guy that's throwing out shade on me scoring women. That dude, too much of a sissy to watch the end of his own team's games.
So give it to me.
What's the barber say?
Next. Scotty D came off the top of the elimination chamber with that one. Damn. Oh, man. All right. A friend to the show, my brother to the show, JR, says Duke because of this. Christian Laettner and Grayson Allen. Yeah, Grayson Allen is a P-E-S-T pest. Yeah.
And now Kyle Filipowski.
Yeah. The tradition continues. Duke Blue Devils. How do you spell pest? B-L-U-E-D-E-V-I-L-S.
And they had Woj for a while. He would smack the floor and all that stuff. Listen, I think JR is largely right I think the Christian Laettner thing might have really began to hate for the Duke hatred. But yeah. Since then, I mean, look at this. Look at what we're talking about here. A bunch of rich entitled white kids wearing blue and white stripes popping up and down like they own the place, and you know you could beat all of them in a fight. That's if you rounded up 100 of them, took them outside, you're whooping at least 99 and a half of them. So that's why you're not a fan. That's why Duke fans get so much hatred.
Scotty D had a hot sauce and sriracha cocktail this morning. Ooh.
JR, I applaud you for mentioning your own team because you know. Y'all is annoying as hell. Go ahead and get to
him. The Duke's just that one booger that you can't flick, all right? Best name of the game, JoJo Comfort says, plenty to choose from on this topic. One hand, I'd say the Steelers fan base. On the other hand, a similar case could be made for Yankees fans. In short, both teams and their fans became victims of their team's success. I also give the nod or head shake, as it were, to Steelers fans. So, he says Steelers
I don't know
fans.
If I agree with it. You guys, do you think that Steelers fans get hate and disrespect?
There was a second comment that leads to some of the vitriol, and because
it's coming right up. It's right here.
Yeah,
I found it. Okay, and so in turn, Matty Icy replied. He says Steelers fans for sure. I have all the proof you need, just like I do when your team plays Pittsburgh. Go to Oscars in North Myrtle Beach, home of the best wings. Get you some good food.
And the reason I wanted to allude to that comment is because being born and raised in North Myrtle Beach, did not make any sense how many Steeler bars there are in North Myrtle Beach. In Myrtle Beach, in the whole Grand Strand region, there are a lot of Steelers bars. I'm like, yo. We're in South Carolina.
Yeah.
I understand my Panthers just came into fruition in 93, 94, their first season. But dang, there's a lot of Western Pennsylvania people that are in North Myrtle Beach.
And
including one guy on this podcast.
And that's the first time I've ever had an icy light beer. at Oscars.
So let me explain this to you. I think I may have explained this before, because people always say, oh my gosh, the Steelers fans, they're the most well-traveled. You can go to Arizona, find a Steelers sports bar. You can go to Miami, find a Steelers sports bar. You can go to Myrtle Beach and find a Steelers sports bar. Well, let me tell you, it's April and it snowed here last week. We're leaving. We're out of here. If you live in Miami, you're not going to say, let's pack up and go north and open a Dolphins bar where it's nice and cold. That doesn't make sense.
No, nope.
You don't see anybody. You never saw a San Diego Chargers bar up in Cleveland because they said, you know what? It's cold here, but I bet you a bar up north would be a nice cold place. Let's move from the sunshiny weather and go north. We leave here. People leave Pittsburgh because it's cold. It's snowing in April.
A lot of y'all came to North Myrtle.
Yeah.
And shout out to my homegirl, Vebo. She one of them.
Veronica. And me. I went there too.
And Scott and D.
But you're not a Steelers fan, so, I mean.
I'm not, but.
You're worse. All right, cool.
Oh, boy. Here we go. All right, TB Tony Bogan, he said, in my mind, I'd have to say the Buffalo Bills. Ohio has a lot of Western New York transplants and vice versa. They are one of many long-suffering fan bases known for jumping through tables and whatnot.
I can see that.
Yeah, you do.
Because Buffalo is just ridiculously cold.
Yeah.
Yeah, see, I think going against that point, I think Buffalo Bills fans get a lot of credit for how passionate they are. I don't think they get a lot of hate and disrespect because they do show up for their team whenever it's freezing and break tables in half and plow through 4 feet of snow and sit in seats with their feet in snow. I don't think they get a lot of hate or disrespect. I feel kind of the opposite with them.
Yeah, that's a loyal fan base. That's a loyal fan base. But, you know, you do have your Bills fans up here. I don't find them as annoying. I'm like, you know, what's more annoying, the Steelers fans or Browns fans?
Waving that yellow towel. That's annoying, that yellow towel.
Yeah. Steelers fans a little bit more annoying. I ain't going to lie to you. Rodney Bellamy, he said, Duke basketball fans. You mentioned to someone you're a Duke basketball fan, you get a stank eye, you get eye rolls, and people just assume you are a fair weather front runner fan. A front runner fan. And unfortunately, a lot of them are. Also, LeBron fans catch a lot of hate. But my number one fake ass Pat fans, and not talk about the true Pats fans. Where did all the Patriots fans go? Used to go out and be flooded with Patriots jerseys everywhere, and now they're gone. Where's the loyalty? Laugh out loud. And MJ Markley, not Malarkey, MJ Markley says, the Yankees.
To Hot Rod, I want to say this about those Pat fans. Where did they go? They went to Tampa Bay.
Yeah.
They went right with Brady. That's exactly where they went.
Yeah. So they were more Tom Brady fans than they were Patriots fans.
I've seen a lot of them, bro. Oh, yeah. Oh, as soon as, and especially when Tampa Bay and Tampa Bay won one. Oh my God, I was like, where did you get this jersey? You got this one. But after they won, okay, bet. All right. Anyway.
I'm like, look, if that's not a Keyshawn Johnson jersey, Brad Johnson jersey, Derrick Brooks, if it ain't one of them, I got questions. We started liking Tampa about 2 years ago. Get your ass out of here. All right. Shout out to everybody for their participation this week. Choices of the Voices. Be Live. Most annoying fan base. Who you got? And you better not say this.
You know what? I'm not going to, because Gamecocks are something else. They are something else. But
we're champions.
Yeah, when women's basketball, that's about all you got. Y'all so touting about the two baseball championships y'all had way back in the day, and then somehow a question comes in, you know what, let me bring it back. That wasn't my answer.
This is sport.
Yeah, I feel like on this show, our Gamecock fan base, we're really disappointed.
Our, there you go.
Severely. Tell them, Scotty D.
But I'm going to say this, and y'all going to laugh. Clemson fans. And when I say Clemson,
we do get fans, a lot of hate. We do get a lot of hate.
I swear to everything known to man. All right. Here's the reason why I say Clemson fans are sometimes, there are a lot of people out there that don't remember anything before 2015.
Nope.
They don't remember the days where we were like, well, who the heck is a Dabo Sweeney? And who named their child that? They don't remember the days of being close but no cigar, and the term Clemsoning was a thing because we could never perform in the big games. They don't. The only thing people remember is when they went to the national championship in 2015, and now they have such a lopsided expectation of our program, is unbearable. Like, and I say that because I look at other fans' reaction, the hate that I get being a true Clemson fan. I remember the days of your Woody Dancer back in on the late 90s. I remember those times where Clemson was just, you know, it was cool. You know, 8-4, 9-3 seasons, 7-6. We were just middle of the barrel. Florida State came through and just wreaked havoc in the ACC. Then Miami, Virginia Tech joined. I'm like, wait a minute. It's gonna be tough. But I get to enjoy the success that we have. But I see so much hate from Gamecock fans, Florida State fans, Notre Dame fans. I don't even know why, but we just swept them baseball this weekend. So Alabama fans, because, I mean, you know, when you beat them 44-16 in the national championship, they a little hurt with that.
Roll down Tide.
I'm just saying. Now the latest one is Georgia fans. And I was like, yo, why do y'all hate us so much? It's because when we started winning, a lot of Clemson fans were just starting to jump on the bandwagon. I'm over here like, I've been here this whole time. I don't know these new dudes. But whatever, it is what it is. I'm going to bleed orange till the day I die. Clemson all day, every day. Put your hand down, Scott. Don't stop. I told you about that. You're wearing Gamecock colors right now, cheering for Clemson. That's not a freaking thing. But he knew what he was doing. He just every time he raises my blood pressure. Every like 245 episodes, he keeps doing this, and I keep just
be like, you got to tell your new Clemson fans. You got to tell them the names of Tommy Bowden and Tommy West, and see how.
Right.
Matter of fact, Tommy West is former Clemson coach. He is 69 years old, and he will be 70. So I just thought I'd just throw that out there. So I was like, I remember Brad Scott, Tommy West, Tommy Bowden, Steve Spurrier. You know, just you remember the intricate rivals and everything. Yeah.
If I said Charlie Whitehurst to some of these new people, they would have no idea how great he is at Clemson.
He was really good for us. He was good for us.
Scotty D, who you got? We're going to stop this right now. Who you got, Scotty D?
Well,
say something smart.
A couple were mentioned that I already agreed. The Cowboy fans, especially led by Stephen A. Smith, they get a lot of hate, especially with him leading the way. And then you got guys like Skip Bayless, and people want to hate him just because they like to see him writhe in pain on the air. I think Ohio State football fans get a lot of grief. I think they're very disrespected and hated because I think they're very, they're very mouthy. We'll say that. They get mouthy. And
they earn the disrespect.
Yeah.
They earn it. No, yeah, shout out to Mercedes. I already know. But as soon as they try to trademark the word D, that set me all the way off when it came to Ohio State fans. Like, D, and mentioned that.
here's one that actually Rodney touched on that was on my mind, and that is the fan base of LeBron James. If you are a hardcore LeBron fan, you get a ton of disrespect. And where does most of it come from? Who gives the LeBron fan base the most disrespect?
Kobe fans and Jordan fans.
Michael Jordan fans, there it is. Because anytime LeBron does anything, people say, "Whoa, he didn't win 6 championships. He didn't win 6 MVPs. He's LaFlop." LeBron can't do anything and catch a break if you are a Jordan fan and you dislike LeBron. And, you know, I'm not a big LeBron fan. I never have claimed to beat the drum for that guy. But he can't do anything without just completely getting torn apart by social media or the fans in general who like Michael Jordan. And
LeBron did it to himself, though.
I'm talking about his fans. His fans, they want to, you know, they were wearing the Heat hats, and then when he went back to Cleveland, they're wearing the Cleveland hats. So that some of the disrespect is warranted, I would say, but
he wasted an hour of our lives. That I still ain't forgave him for that. He wasted an hour of our lives, the whole TV special that's tell us I'm taking my talents to South Beach. Yo, my dude. Yeah. So you got no loyalty for your team, or it was the owner at the time. I want to give LeBron his props, but it is his fans though that are insufferable. Like it's not the thing about it, it's not yeah. even LeBron. It's his fans. It's the media. I just like every single thing he's done the past year has been, oh, he's passed this person. He's done this. He's the greatest. Da, da, da. I'm like, yo. You're getting a lot of longevity awards. If Michael Jordan came out after high school, I mean, he'd be right up there in less time.
Yeah.
But
and there you have it. There you have it. Thank you for illustrating my point. Yeah. Eddie Cole.
Say what I said.
I would say the most annoying fans would have to be the Cowboys, because they're still living on accomplishments on the past. We them boys, we this, we that. I think the problem is we know it by now. And if you don't know it by now, you've been stuck under a rock the past 25, 30 years. Is Jerry damn Jones, all right? Jerry Jones can't seem to stay out of the way. He told us I'm going all in. They look like they all flat the hell out. Like, I get it. A moment of confession here. Before I became a Carolina Panthers fan, I was a Cowboys fan. I exactly was a Cowboys fan. I mean, I remember the triplets, you know, Mike, Emmett, Troy, Larry Allen, Jay Novacek. I could name a lot of guys on the Cowboys. But then the Panthers came around. I said, okay, what's more easier on my parents' bank account? A trip to Dallas, which includes a flight, which no one's ever flew on at that period of time in my family, or just going up the road a few hours north to Charlotte. I was like, yep. A Panthers fan, I will be. It's just denial is a word for some cop. You got Scotty, you got Cowboys fans like yourself. You see it for what it is, and you don't try to find excuses. Well, you know,
they're very disrespected. Very disrespected.
Yeah, and for you and for some of them, they're just like, well, they did. We them boys is like. Come on now, Scotty. We've had several episodes where you went off on Jerry Jones for keeping Mike McCarthy, and then when he got hired, so it's just like you get it. Some of the other fans, they just don't. They
very unjustly disrespected us Cowboys fans.
I want to say this. You want to know why? You want to know why the Cowboys are disrespected the way they are?
Jealousy.
Bob Ryan. He's now the vice president and editor-in-chief of NFL Films. 1978, he coined the phrase, and he said this, and I quote, "They appear on television so often that their faces are as familiar to the public as presidents and movie stars. They are the Dallas Cowboys, America's team." This was 1978. Yeah. The Cowboys are no longer not even remotely close to being America's team anymore.
Sure.
They like that. That is like, how are they America's team? Just because they
had a show called Dallas
because they're the most interesting.
Yeah,
interesting.
They get the highest ratings, and they don't win championships. They still get the highest ratings, the highest merchandise sales, and the most valuable franchise in the world when it comes to sports.
Yeah.
The circus is.
You're right. Maybe too. They should be. They should be called
because of a whole bunch of clowns.
The world's team. Maybe you're right. They're not America's team anymore. They're the world's team.
Oh, we about to stop this right now, Scotty. What's on tap next week?
Soccer. Don't you dare do that.
The world's team. All right. I like that. I think I'm gonna see if I can't trademark that here this afternoon. Get a little copyright on that. All right. So next week, since we were on the topic of Caitlin Clark and the female athlete, who is your all-time favorite female athlete? That's going to be an easy one to choose from. There's hundreds, thousands to choose from. Who's your all-time favorite female athlete? Eddie, cool. That'll give us something to talk about next.
That'll be a good one. That'll be a fun one. I'll make sure I contain myself during that one. And that being said, it's been another edition of The Choices of the Voices. Coming up next, B-Live, get to grabbing that pepper grinder. It's time for a round of pepper. Coming at you right here on the Sports Bros Podcast. Ooh.
Okay, boys, let's bring it home with a round of pepper.
All right, you heard the woman. It's time for us to go home and get what I call the hell up out of here. We got to. And with that being said, around the pepper, you know how we do it. Three topics, rapid fire style, kind of sort of not really here to engage, enlighten, educate, and entertain. With that being said, I'll go first. On this day in history, back in 1912, the first exhibition baseball game at Fenway Park was played, as it was the Red Sox versus Harvard. Damn, Fenway Park has been around for a very, very long time. They
played Harvard?
Yeah, they played a college team. Yeah, they played a college team. I think they beat the brakes off of them, too, if I'm not mistaken. But over to you, Scotty D.
13 members of the 2024 Hall of Fame class for the NBA for basketball was announced on Saturday, including Vince Carter, Chauncey Billups, and the late Walter Davis, who passed last year. But my personal favorite that I'm excited that is on this list is Michael Cooper. Coop! The 67-year-old former Laker, 5-time NBA champ, 8-time all-defensive player, and Larry Bird said was the toughest guy that ever guarded him. I'm excited for this one because I didn't think this was something that I was ever going to see. Michael Cooper going to the Hall of Fame. Be live to you.
Didn't I also see that Jerry West made it for the third time?
For the third time? Yeah, I saw that.
Yeah. Once as a player, once as for the NWO, and then once as like a contributor.
Wow. Oh, my first pepper point. Man, oh, man. Do you know a guy by the name of Malachi Flynn?
His name sounds familiar.
Have you heard that name before? Well, it shouldn't, because he's a bench player for the lowly Detroit Pistons. But he decided this past week, even though they lost to the Atlanta Hawks, that he would come off the bench and light the world on fire, scoring 50 points off the bench. Only the third player in NBA history, when they start tracking starters and stats, only three players have scored 50 points off the bench. Jamal Crawford scored 51 for the Phoenix Suns in 2019, and Nick Anderson scored 50 for the Orlando Magic over the New Jersey Nets in 1993. Malachi Flynn, welcome to the party. 50, dropping a 50 burger off the bench. Eddie Cool, the ball.
Yeah, tell me that's a job audition without telling me that's a job audition. All right, so here we go. Panthers. Yeah, we kept one home, B-Live. Finally, instead of giving everybody away for a pack of peanuts, a pack of nabs, a Dunkin' Donuts coffee, and a single loose Newport cigarette, the Panthers and defensive end Derek Brown agrees to a 4-year, $96 million extension, all right? According to the Associated Press, Brown agreed to a 4-year, $96 million extension. That includes $63.1 million in guaranteed money on Friday. His agent is Drew Rosenhaus, Jason Rosenhaus, and Robert Bailey. He's a first round pick out of Auburn, coming off a year in which he set the NFL record for tackles by defensive linemen with 103, breaking the mark set of 98 set by Miami's Christian Wilkins set in 2022. Since tackles became an official stat in 1994. Really? Wow, that's crazy. Well, B-Live, Derek Brown, stay with the Panthers. Over to you, Scotty D.
Man on the move is Diggs, Stephon Diggs, going to the Texans in a trade that happened last Monday, joining Joe Mixon in that offense. And suddenly it looks like the Cowboys might not be the best team in Texas. Keep an eye on them Houston Texans next year. Boy, they are rolling. B-Live, over to you.
Oh, I'm going to switch it up a little bit. CJ Stroud. God. My bad. I'm sorry. Lord. Yeah. All right, I'm okay. I'm good. All right, well, we're going to switch over to Major League Baseball, And you know, I've had a keen insight and interest when it comes to the Athletics. Well, the A's, I do not mention their city because this will be the final year that the A's will be in Oakland. But they're not going to Vegas because Vegas won't be ready until 2028. They're going about 90 miles up the road to Sacramento. And they're going to be sharing the stadium with the Sacramento Rivercats, a San Francisco Giants AAA farm team. And, so the A's have a new home. It's over for Oakland after this year. We have the Sacramento Athletics for the next 3 years. Eddie Cool, the ball.
I've heard of people being homeless before, but never an entire whole baseball team.
That's a damn shame. Being homeless with a place to play. Ain't that something? You playing in the community park? I know it's been a while since we heard of the name LeVar Ball. Well, guess what? The big homie LeVar Ball is back in the news again. That's right. Mr. 2.2 points a game has something to say about the conditioning in the shoes of his sons in the NBA. Right now, both of them are shut down for the season. LaMelo's been shut down for the Hornets. And Lonzo Ball, has he even touched the court this season? I don't think he has, right? I don't know. Haven't heard a single thing about Lonzo Ball. And got this little piece of reading from Newsweek, and it says, well, he's back at it again, and this time he takes a shot at the NBA and their conditioning styles regarding his two sons, Lonzo and LaMelo. Ball points to blame at the NBA for the recent injury struggles of his two sons. And he says, and I'll quote, the reason they hurt is because they got away from me and they started doing those Rudy Poole workouts. Because if you keep running them hills, you're going to keep that power and strength. But you start dealing with those rubber bands and doing this lightweight stuff, of course you're going to start breaking down. A lot of things have to do with them raggedy A shoes. Well, he didn't say ass, but you know the context. A lot of it has to do with them raggedy shoes that LaMelo be wearing. Them shoes are not made for him the right way. That's why he keeps tweaking his ankle every single game. And a little side note. LaMelo is smack dab in the middle of a $100 million contract with Puma. So let me get this straight. You blaming the NBA and their conditioning, whatever they got going on, and them raggedy shoes. But meanwhile, you had these big baller brand shoes that make sense.
Ain't no sense to be made. It's LeVar Ball. He should be fortunate enough that he has that pedigree to have kids that made it to the NBA. But they is about as, they is just paper soft.
This kid
got paper clips for ligaments and limbs and stuff. I don't even know what to tell you. He got something, and we keep putting him in the news for whatever reason. But
they keep putting them in the news. We don't do that over here. We don't do that at all.
This is ridiculous.
Very ridiculous. Over to you, Scotty D.
It's a big fight coming up. It's not to the magnitude of Logan Paul winning WrestleMania or Jake Paul fighting Tyson. But next weekend is the long-anticipated UFC 300, a card that to me is underwhelming on paper. But I will see Justin Gaethje crush Max Holloway and Alex Pineda going to crush Jamal Hill for the light heavyweight championship in the main event. UFC 300, Saturday night. Be live.
Take it's all yours.
Oh, well. For my third and final pepper point, in the land of misinformation that we live in, there is one particular holiday that I cannot stand for the life of me because I like to see the hottest news, topics, and stories as they come out. So the holiday that I hate the absolute most in this day and age is April Fool's Day.
Oh, my God.
I hate it. I hate it with an ungodly passion. People grow the hell up. But hats off to the Florida Atlantic social media team because they put out such an elaborate story that had me running and researching and educating and trying to figure out what's really going on because they were going to make college football history by facing rival South Florida on an aircraft carrier. And I'm over here thinking, can that actually work? Playing football on an aircraft carrier? I remember there's been a basketball game.
Yeah, I remember that. Yeah.
And I'm sitting over here like, oh, that's going to be tough. That's going to be great. And then I realized what day it was. And I was like, you mother.
You fell for the banana in the tail.
I didn't share it, but I was about to. And I was like, oh, my God, because this is a hot button topic on an aircraft carrier. And then I realized I came back to reality and realized that, yeah, the dimensions for a football field on an aircraft carrier, it's balls to be in the ocean.
Yeah, it's just bad.
Ain't no room for people to say, you can't really see the game from the sidelines.
And as always, thank you for watching / listening to another episode of the Sports Bros Podcast. And in closing, do something nice for yourself. What?
We get into the closing, but a public service announcement for all of our listeners out there. We record via Zoom and the Zoom free version. So from time to time, we get to talking and Zoom will be like, all right, you got about 2 more minutes to go before we cut you clean, smooth off. And they always leave the best for last when it comes to pepper points. And so I know I got cut clean, smooth off. So before we end in closing, I hate April Fool's Day.
Okay.
Florida Atlantic and South Florida are not playing on an aircraft carrier. Go ahead and get that out there as well. And I would like to include this last little bit before we head on out of here. I want to give a big, big congratulations and also prayers as well to one of our avid listeners to the show, Tristan Vitarelli. Tristan and his wife, Megan, just introduced a baby into the world, Santino Vitarelli, born just a couple of days ago. And prayers go out to them and their family, health complications and stuff like that. Caused the baby to come 5 weeks premature. So prayers, thoughts to Santino, Tristan, Megan. I love you guys so very much. Thank you for your support with the show. Santino was born 2 pounds, 11 ounces. So he's a tiny little thing, but I know he's a fighter. And the Sports Bros Podcast, we are here. And our prayers are with you as always as he grows strong, grows up and big and all the things that a baby should do. So congratulations to the Vitarelli family. Now you can go ahead and kick us out of here with that.
All right, and speaking of that, B-Live, my twin nephews, they were born premature. And you can't tell now because these guys like video games, they like Cheetos, and they just and they like basketball. So to the Vitarelli family, keep praying. And keep the faith. Keep the faith because the big man got you. He watching and he got you. And in closing, do something nice for yourself. And if you can, do something nice for someone else. They're greatly appreciated now more than ever. Be a blessing, not a burden, and pray for people, all right? And pray for people. It's been another episode of the Sports Bros Podcast. Take us home, B-Live.
Yes, sir.
And we out.
Hey, it's Eddie Cool here from the Sports Bros Podcast. Thank you for listening, and as always, continue to follow us on all of our social media platforms. Just click the link in the description box and keep up with the Sports Bros Podcast. And once again, thanks for listening.